Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Influencer Adam Waheed joins us and the news as well.
Adam Carolla's I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture, has over 1,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Here's one.
This book is present in comedy and window. This Adam wrote long ago, the now coming to pass and reality.
Yep. Sounds about right. Pick up I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture, and leave your five-star review on Amazon. Get all the links at adamcarolla.com.
Adam Waheed is our guest, actor, social media content creator, influencer as well. His website, youtube.com/AdamW. I just watched a very funny, short, very short, but very thorough bit about sitting in the emergency row in the airplane. Good to see you, Adam.
Good to see you. Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. One of one thing I'm very intrigued in, it's all the way at the bottom of your bio, but I was reading about it today online. You made the roster at SMU as a defensive back?
I did. I used to be way bigger. I used to be like 200 pounds. Now I weigh 180.
Also, was that... what's your heritage?
So I'm Egyptian. I'm also mixed with I'm Iranian and Afghan, but mainly Egyptian. But most people think I'm Indian. I get Indian all the time in comments.
Yeah. I know that the Big 12 is lousy with Egyptian DBs.
Yeah, that's right.
I only got in Texas.
I only got in because of diversity, guys. I'll be honest with you.
Sure.
Well, you had to be quite a standout in high school, certainly, to get on. Did you get recruited from SMU, or did you walk on?
I walked on. You know, it's crazy. I actually never played a down of football in high school. When I graduated, I went to community college, and the community college didn't even have a football team. And I still wanted to play college football. And I told myself, I'll find a way to play college football. I want to play Division I college football. And I was in community college. I went to a camp. I went to a camp in Long Island, New York. And I ended up playing like the best I've ever played in my life. I won the offensive and defensive MVP at the camp. And I got recruited to come at least get a tryout to go walk on at SMU. Walked on, made the team. And that's kind of how I got there.
All right. Wait a minute. How was it your goal to play Division I football, but you never thought to play football in high school?
No. I was on the team. I just never played.
Oh, you just never played.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had a late growth spurt. I was like skinny. I wasn't athletic. I was really slow. And I just started working out really hard after high school into college. Wow. And yeah.
It does seem like you probably had a pretty good high school team too, I would assume.
No, we sucked. We were
horrible.
What? I mean, you wouldn't even play?
It's New York football. You know what I'm saying? New York's not even known for football. So think of how bad that was. You know, it was a really bad team.
Yeah, Texas, Florida, California. That seems to be where many of the big-time recruits come from. So then so you attend SMU, right? And you're studying what?
Sociology, just because it was the easiest major.
And
but it ended up being hard.
And when did the move to social influencer start?
So I did 4 years there, And then when I graduated, I realized I wasn't good enough to go to the NFL. So at the time, my sister was like, hey, you should, you know, you're funny. You should move to LA and be an actor. So I moved to LA. I listened to her and I was an assistant and I was doing stand-up actually at the time. I was doing stand-up comedy and that was just going horribly. I was doing it for about a year and a half. I was trying to act. I was trying to get a manager, agent, couldn't even get an audition, nothing. And I saw people making stuff online. And because when I first moved to LA, I think I had 300 followers. So I didn't have a social platform at all. And I saw people making stuff online. I was like, oh, shit, let me try this. Maybe this will work. And it worked.
So what's the protocol? Like, I know this is going to sound like boring old guy stuff, but you're producing content for your followers and you have 10.4 million followers and then TikTok and on TikTok and then 2.8 followers on Instagram. So is there a schedule? Like, do you wake up every morning and go, I need to produce X amount of content for these people in order to not have them go across the street and start looking at somebody else?
Yeah. Oh, it's a full schedule. So one, I post every single day. Weekly, I'm putting out an IGTV, 3 reels, 2 pictures, 1 in-feed video. I'm posting 5 stories a day. That's just on Instagram. I'm also going live 1 hour a week just on Instagram. Then I'm posting every single day on TikTok and I'm posting every single day on Facebook.
And do you spend like, I do a podcast every day, so I carry around a little notebook and I make little scribble down little notes of things that I think are funny or that I want to talk to or things I hear on other shows. Is that how the process goes for you?
Yeah, same thing. I have a list of notes, just one-liners that I write down just throughout the day. And then when it's time to shoot, I'll go back and I'll be like, all right, I want to develop this idea out more. I'll write it out more, or I want to shoot this. And I'll write like a small little like 1-page script. And then when I shoot it, it takes about like an hour, maybe two, and then get to editing and then kind of pump it out like that.
So the one I just watched was you on an airplane and it was you sitting in the aisle where they want to make sure you have to verbally agree to do all the tasks it takes in the emergency exit aisle and then hijinks ensue. So that was filmed inside an airplane, but not a real airplane, one of those set airplanes, right?
But no, that was actually filmed on a real airplane.
Oh, it was?
God. No, I'm just fucking with you. No, it was a set. It was a set.
But, you know, that isn't free, and then you have to have a bunch of actors work with you, and you have to light it, and you have to shoot it, and you have to edit it. I mean, are you funding all of that?
Yeah, it's a whole deal. I have a whole team of people that I've hired that I paid to, you know, create, you know, get the lighting. I have a producer. I have a DP. Of course, I'm directing everything and coming up with all the ideas, but I have an editor. And I mean, when I started, I was just doing the shit on my iPhone, you know, like I was doing everything on my iPhone. I was editing on iMovie on the phone. And as time went along, I just learned more. Obviously, I was able to make more money. I was doing these videos, you know, with no money in the beginning. And as my audience grew, as I was able to make more money, of course, you know, I put more into the content. And now I have this team and this whole system and process of how I create and post.
And is this a way to transition into doing a sitcom or a network on a network or a big budget film? Or is this just its own world? Like, I'm going on. Tomorrow will be my 3,000th podcast. And I think people think that the plan is to transition to some syndicated radio show or terrestrial radio or something, or at least they thought that for a long period of time. But I feel like, no, this is the job.
Yeah. First off, congrats on 3,000. That's a lot. So at first that was the plan, right? I was like, well, shit, you know, if I have all these followers, then they're going to want to put me in a movie or they're going to want to put me in a show. Obviously, that's not the case. But as time went along, you know, I learned more about the business and content creation. And what I'm doing now, so to say, is the dream, right? You know, I thought at first, you know, some of these TV shows or movies, they're not even really even reaching 300,000 people, 200,000 people per movie or show. And, you know, I'm able to reach billions of people, right? So that, so the reason why I started was to make as many people laugh as possible, right? And it seems as what I'm doing now is doing that. And, you know, of course, you get to A-list actors and whatnot. It's a different world. But compared to the regular working actor, I mean, being on social media is way more lucrative, way more eyeballs, and, you know, you're your own boss.
How do you monetize it?
There's tons of ways. So the three main ways I monetize my content is one, directly off the platform, right? So like on Instagram for IGTVs, you can directly monetize through AdSense. Like they'll run ads on your videos, right? Same with YouTube, same with Facebook. TikTok as well has a creator fund where they pay, where the actual platform pays you to post. So that's the first way. Second way is branded content. So I'm constantly working with top tier companies like Pepsi, Mountain Dew, Crocs weekly. And I'm doing branded content where I'm creating, you know, an idea based around whatever campaign they have. And, you know, they'll approve it. They'll pay me. I'll post it. And then thirdly is just through my own merchandise and products.
I know. I don't know. I feel like I've taken over where Larry King left off. Like, I just feel like old guy asking young guy questions.
How does it work?
A creator who makes content.
Everyone who watches gives you a nickel. Is that how it works? Is there a slot in their computer? But I'm really way out of it. Like I understand how podcasting works, but I don't understand how the rest of it. Well, to be fair, I never found out how the rest of it works. It's not like I tried and I don't understand. But it is so massive. And I guess the question is, you know, we're in kind of this crazy wild, wild west, but the ultimate meritocracy, which is everyone's got a phone, everyone can create content, everyone can film themselves, everyone can do whatever they want to do. But are they going to find an audience? And then how do you hang on to that audience and build that audience once you do it? And I guess that answer is never stop putting out content.
You can never stop. And I mean, don't feel so bad. There's a lot of people who do it, you know, who don't even know themselves how to monetize their page or how to grow or how to keep an audience. Sometimes people get like big off, you know, one gimmick, and then they become like this one hit wonder on the internet, and then it's like, it's over. Right. So it's tough. It's tough to be consistent and to keep it going. But yeah, there's a lot of people who are in it who don't even know how the hell they got there. So
Egyptian is your heritage mostly. How big is this in that part of the world?
Yeah, actually, Cairo is one of my top cities in my demographic. I went out there last November and I did a meet and greet, and it was pretty wild. We had like 5,000 people show up. So it was pretty insane. But yeah, it's huge out there. I mean, there's 100 million people in Egypt, and they're pretty active on social media. To be honest, when you go out into like when you travel, the fandom is like even crazier out there, because a lot of people, you know, a lot of kids, they watch YouTube because it's free. They watch Instagram because it's free, and they don't necessarily have cable or pay for whatever streaming platform. So like the fans out there are really obsessed with you because that's all they watch. That's all they can watch. And then especially you don't live there, so when you go to their country, they're like, holy shit, this person actually showed up to my country. Like, so it's like triple, like, you know, I always say if you get stopped in LA, when you go anywhere else in the world, you get like, you know, mobbed.
Yeah, it kind of made me think about the United States, which is LA is usually kind of the worst crowd and the worst audience because everyone hears over it or doesn't speak English. It's probably one or the other. But if you get outside LA, then the fans kind of appreciate it more. But I guess if you get outside of the country, they even appreciate it more than that. So for you, you talked about doing stand-up originally, and I used to it seemed like, well, that was the only thing to do. You want to do comedy, you got to do stand-up. But do you think about going back and doing stand-up? Because I went back later on in my career and did stand-up and found it rewarding.
Yeah, I definitely want to go back. I actually was trying. I had some shows planned at Laugh Factory right before the pandemic hit. So I didn't actually get back into it. And I mean, it's cool to do it now, right? Because I have an audience, you know, who I know will attend, right? But back then, like, I was doing some pretty shitty gigs, and it's stand-up is tough. Stand-up is really, really tough to just get your cadence right and your set right. And I bombed for sure a bunch of times, but I was ready to get back into it. I was working on a set, but you know, pandemic, it was a good excuse not to do it.
Brian,
we talk about like industries or people who've done well during the pandemic. I have to imagine, Adam, has your audience grown more than you know normally would during the pandemic? I imagine people being home and you know having time to kill on YouTube. I imagine more people would find you.
Oh yeah, this past year has been I hate to say it, but it's been the best year for me. Like literally, all you can do is really watch content on your phone, right? I mean, just for context, so I started like about 4 years ago, and I had like about 1 billion views, 1.5 billion maybe, like until 2020, right? When 2020 hit, just in 2020 alone, from January 2020 to December, I did 2.1 billion just wow. in last year alone. And of course, you know, a big majority of it, not only my audience was, you know, growing regardless, but, you know, the pandemic is just skyrocketed my views. Well, so super thankful for that.
It's like my grandpa.
Well, not thankful for the pandemic, but
it's like my grandpa.
We understand. What you're
my grandpa yeah. always he used to COVID. Say, you know, you start at 1.5 billion views. There's only one direction to go. You gotta go.
Your grandpa knew. Was your grandpa on social media?
No, he made goulash and did calisthenics in his underwear. In
the original social media, he wrote plays.
Oh yeah, he wrote plays.
That's right.
I have a quick question, just for you know, everybody's watching this and everybody wants to do what you're doing, and you know they think, well, yeah, you might work really hard, and you know you already said. You know, the amount of content you put out in a day, but it beats my job. I could do it. Just to kind of like get everyone's head straight, how many hours a day would you say you're working on your business?
Every second. Literally every second. I have to come up with content. I have to be ahead of my content. I'm also doing like things on the side, right? Like I'm doing a short film. I'm trying to do a feature film. Even when it comes to acting, auditioning, right? I might not be booking, but I still have to do these damn auditions, right? Because my agent's making me do it. But like I can't just go and just film a self tape and say, here you go. I have to actually put the work into like, you know, break down the script. I'm looking at other scripts. I'm creating other stuff. So, and that's what I'm doing in my off time, right? So like from 5 a.m. all the way till damn near 11 every single day, I'm working on social media. Then in my off time, I'll stay up till like 2:30 and I'll just bang out the stuff that's not social media. So every single day, every day, every second, I don't have much of a social life. But I mean, hey, it's a really rewarding job and I love doing it. And I love making people laugh.
You want to hang with us and do some news and just kind of jump in and crack wise?
Let's do it.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Adam Waheed, and we'll do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral, weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff face on TMZ. Joe Biden, Kamala. Meet news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Well, there's been a lot of top stories, obviously, in the past few days. We need to start with what's most important. I want to make sure it's getting the attention it deserves because it really is the most important headline of the week. Face Off is getting a sequel. And Deadline has reported that a follow-up to the 1997 John Woo-directed thriller is in the works. Currently remains unclear if Travolta and Cage will reprise their roles of FBI agents.
If they do, they should call it Hair Off, where they just swap toupees.
Yeah, swap wigs.
It's believed that the parts will be recast, but I like where you're going.
You know, it's a weird. There's many weird things about that movie, and I've seen it many times. But they made some kind of ballsy choices, which is Travolta when he becomes evil because he swaps it out with Nick Cage, plows Travolta's wife. I mean, he bangs his foe's wife. Mm-hmm. He gives her good plowing. You know what I mean?
He's evil.
Yeah, he's evil, but I mean...
I don't remember that scene.
They don't... most of the time when movie making, she would get suspicious or say, not tonight or something like that. Now, he gives it to her. Now,
maybe Maybe he was better, so she didn't want to look a gift horse in the mouth.
Like, what's going on? Don't ask questions.
Don't you feel like most of your girlfriends who have been with a man for more than 15 years would recognize the penis of the man?
I do believe they would, yeah.
I'd like to believe they would.
Who smashed whose wife again? It was Travolta that smashed Cage's wife, or was it
Cage Travolta? As Travolta.
Yes.
They switch faces.
They switch faces.
I don't remember that. Shit, I don't really
remember. So it was Cage donning John Travolta's face doing the wife.
But do you not understand, Adam?
It makes sense now. Yeah, how do you not recognize the penis? It's like...
Not only the penis, but the motion of the ocean.
The general build.
General build, the position. How about just breath? You know what I mean? Because I think Cage was a smoker, certainly in that film. I feel like she would know. That's all.
Yeah. We got to suspend our disbelief, but I like Peace Off with the toupee.
Yeah, Peace Off. They take their hairpiece off and they just swap them. It's a 40-second movie.
That's great.
I'd click play.
Well, Larry Flynt will have a funeral that mirrors the way he lived, according to reports. So he's not going quietly. The attendees will be able to enjoy the presence of strippers, alcohol, just like they're at a big party. Larry Flynt will be laid to rest, I think, this coming weekend, according to TMZ, which revealed in detail how this tribute's going to take place. So not even the restrictions with COVID are going to spoil this party, because they're going to, you know, do four to a table. They're going to socially distance. They're going to do the whole thing. In fact, it's not even a private party at all. It's open to anyone who wants to be a part of it. You got to be 21. You got to pay $50 and then you get your socially distanced strippers and there's a cover for the funeral.
Adam, do you remember Larry Flynt?
I don't. Maybe. What does he do? Or what did he do?
He was a publisher who published a magazine, Hustler. We have some horrible Hustler jokes. I was told.
Oh, cartoons?
You can't do this
cartoons.
With company, Adam.
Sorry.
I've seen that magazine. Yeah.
Yes, you have. Have you seen... All right. I announced that they had, back in the day, the most racist cartoons. I mean, you think Doonesbury's racist? No. The most racist cartoons ever. And we took a little dive into Hustler and found a few. But I think a few people have sent us in some of the most racist cartoons from Hustler. What'd they do? Send them to you, Chris?
No, I found these ones.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good. Yeah. And just to set the table, we're not a sensitive group here, and I don't think I'm hyperbolizing when I say these cartoons were shocking.
Yes.
They're horrifying.
So this dude would have definitely got canceled if he was... he would have definitely got canceled these days.
Well, they tried to cancel him in like 74 when they shot him.
With a bullet.
a serial killer shot him.
Yes, but he bounced
back. That's
how
they used to cancel people back in the day.
Yes.
Now you just can't. Wow.
Yeah, now you get kicked off your platform. But he didn't have
a
platform. No, he got shot. Yeah, that's when we used to cancel you with a 38. Sorry, do you have these, Max Vanna?
Oh, yeah, we have three ready.
All right, like, are these from the 70s or the 80s?
Oh, still unclear.
Oh, jeez.
Okay.
Oh, no.
There is
a
black gynecologist who delivers, or obstetrician, who delivers a baby, and he delivers the white baby, and then he does a jump shot. Because black guys, you know, they play basketball even when they're doctors.
Yeah, they can't help it.
Was this before everybody was saying Kobe when they shot? How long ago was this?
Or was this during that? This is probably the 70s, maybe the early 80s, as I recall.
Look at the minstrel caricature face.
What's the caption say, Max Banner?
Yeah, I can't.
The caption says, Dr. Wilson used to be with the Globetrotters.
Now he's delivering kids, but he's shooting them. He's doing a jump shot. Yeah. All right. That's good and racist.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Instead of Newton's apple?
What's with the lips?
No, this is William Tell.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
The apple on the head?
Yes, but there's a watermelon on top of the head of the black person with the black person shooting.
Yeah, this. Well, at least we know this was in July.
This was in July. That's a summer fruit, you know. All right.
All right, and then we've got one more.
I don't even know what this one is.
Chris, why don't you read this?
Oh, no. Read the caption.
We thanks the Lord for food and sex, but mostly for them welfare checks. Amen.
Dawson shouldn't be laughing.
And there's a
in
giant
the
rat on the table.
Oh, they cooked a rat. It's a black family. All right. I told you guys Hustler was racist.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
That's pretty rough. No one said anything at the time. And again, these were semi-modern times. This is 70s, 80s, probably even. All right.
Post-civil rights movement.
Oh, yes.
For sure.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, they'd always say we've come a long way, but we got a lot more work to do. Maybe they were talking about Hustler and Larry Flynt.
Don't you feel stupid, Adam?
Anyway, he's going to be missed. That's the point.
Well, you mentioned Larry King earlier, so let's talk about Larry, the late Larry, right now. His widow has claimed she was blindsided to learn that he left a handwritten amendment in his will that completely wrote her out of an inheritance, according to the Daily Mail. So King reportedly added the note in 2019, advising for an even split of his $2 million estate to his five children in the event of his death. It would have been written 2 months after he filed for divorce from his seventh wife, Sean, who said she will now go to court to fight for her share, as she claims that King could have been pressured to change it. And by the way, Andy and Chaya, two of his children, both died last year. So that also changes things. They were married for 22 years. That's the longest of any of his eight marriages. Filed for divorce in August of 2019, had not been settled in court. But I checked another source and it didn't give them a number, but $2
million? Thank you, Gina. I was just about to say, like, Larry King had a $2 million estate. He'd been divorced seven times, so understandable. But 22 years with the same woman, I don't know if Larry took care of his money.
Yeah, way too much soup.
way too much matzo brie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It was funny. I mean, not funny, but sad when you realize that two of his kids died before he did. And then I heard someone say, like, that's right, he died of a broken heart. It's like, when you're 87, it could be plaque in your arteries as well. Like, Hey, Adam, do you know who Larry King is? Or
I think I've heard of him. No, I'm just kidding. I know Larry King. I know Larry King for sure. The guy from CNN.
Yes.
Right.
Who?
I
looked random. I mean, I did already, but just for you guys. Looking on Fox right now, it says 2 million. Looked at Page Six, it says 2 million. You think that might actually be the story?
Maybe he had money hidden. Maybe his money's hidden somewhere. Maybe somewhere in the CNN office, like somewhere.
Right.
He might have stashed off some money.
I think there was one marriage or one woman that he married twice, because it's he was married eight times. Double so, tipping. You know, that might bleed you.
Does the second, married twice, does it ever work? I mean, to the same person.
Did he do that too?
Yeah, Hefner. Hefner married. I guess he married two women. I don't know. It's weird. I mean, not Larry King, but
Hefner. Hefner's a bad example.
The Hefner thing. When you try to remember, he's carrying the whole thing into the very last years, where he had the little harem following him around of the beach of the peroxide blondes, 23-year-olds who like it. Hefner was married three times.
And he had movie night, and he'd show like an old movie, and these fucking bitches would be so bored.
Right. Like the Maltese Falcon. You guys don't know?
Does it happen one night?
Good news, ladies.
Oh, great.
We got an A-lister coming to watch it with us. Mr. Don Adams. Okay? Don Adams. Get smart. Hello.
Oh, he's the one from Miami Vice. He was kind of hot, I guess.
No, that's Don Johnson.
Oh.
He's not allowed here anymore. This is the Don Adams, one of the greatest comedians who hasn't worked in 41 years.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad to say I went to the Playboy Mansion a couple times.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's epic. That's epic.
And
it's still open. People are still going, right?
Well,
I don't know.
Remember, I believe the story was when he was really close to like checking out, they were selling the mansion. And one caveat was you had to let Hef live there until his demise. So I can't remember who took it over, but I don't think they're allowed to, you know, destroy it and totally re-renovate it. I think it's like, you know, like a historical landmark. Mm-hmm. So it'll still be the mansion, but I mean, who knows if you're even allowed to go.
Think of all the macaques that we displace.
and not flamingos, peacocks.
Peacocks, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Ashley Judd has a harrowing story that she just did an interview about. She survived a 55-hour ordeal in Africa after she tripped and shattered her leg in four places. She explained this to a New York Times columnist, Nicholas Kristof, on an interview he did with her. She said she was in ICU trauma in South Africa, which when she was taken from the Congo, which is a country that's not equipped to deal with a catastrophic energy like shattering your leg. So she went on to say that the disaster insurance allowed her to get an operating table in South Africa. And I'm going to let you hear from her in a second. But here's why she was there and here's what happened. So she's tracking bonobos at night in the Congolese rainforest, and she tripped over a fallen tree. She said she spent 5 hours lying on the forest floor. A team carried her out of the forest by hammock. That took an hour. She says she slipped in and out of consciousness. They evacuated Judd by motorcycle to the nearest town with an airport. There she waited 6 hours for a medical flight to South Africa. So my thought was, motorcycle, you say? So I found that part in the interview, and she shed some light on that.
All right.
And then comes the motorbike ride, you know, and when Martin said, who's going to ride with Ashley on the motorbike, it took courage for someone to do that with me because they had to physically hold me up. It was one man driving and then one man sitting behind me. And I said, you know, I'd like a man of God. And so Maradona, who's one of my buddies, we talk about polygamy versus monogamy all the time. That's our favorite chat.
Fun.
And so Maradona got on the bike. He had to hold my leg and I had to physically hold the top part of my shattered tibia together. And we did that for 6 hours.
What are bonobos?
Niche.
Monkeys.
Yeah.
A monkeys. Why was she tracking them?
I think that's like her cause, like, you know, saving them.
Frightening monkeys.
I feel like just trying to explain that to you without looking down, I felt like the Bluth family in Arrested Development with Portia de Rossi. Well, I'm trying to help the wetlands. What are you trying to do? Dry them? Leave them.
So she's tracking monkeys.
Yeah, tracking bonobos.
To save them,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
And when she gets them, is she put like a collar on them or does she tag them?
She's with a team that do this in, you know, in the Congolese rainforest. And she wants to lend her celebrity to what these people are already doing. So she went with them and shattered her leg and made and destroyed their trip.
Yeah.
Cut her off.
Right.
Yeah, I guess you've got to kind of think about where you're going and the closest hospital and the closest place you could get any help. And that's a long ways. How different are those sisters? I mean, she's got
Naomi,
Judd sisters.
Who's the mom?
Well, Naomi was the mom.
Naomi's the mom. A lot of Judd range there, right?
Yeah.
Didn't she give the insane Women's March speech?
She gave a Women's March speech.
That was unhinged?
It was theatrical.
Did you have, Maxwell, you can find that. Look, I don't believe in karma, but if you're going to be that unhinged, I don't know. Maybe you do slip on a mossy rock while tracking bonobos in the rainforest. I don't know. Could be a payback's a bitch. But, yeah, she gave a crazy, I think it was the 1 million, or I don't know how many, but the Women's March. What happened with the Women's March, Gina?
What happened?
Did you guys land on your feet, or there's still work to do, or how? What do we need to fix here?
Yeah, I think we're good.
You're good?
I think we did it, yeah.
I still think there's a long way to go.
Well, we've come a long way, baby.
Yes, you have.
Ashley Judd also did a TED talk about being trolled online, and it is jarring because she opens it, but you don't know really what she's doing at first. She opens it just firing off things that have been said about her, but she doesn't put it in any context. So she gets on stage and she's like, I'd fuck the shit out of Ashley Judd. I wouldn't even rape her. And you're like, what are you talking? Please don't get that.
She read them in first person.
She didn't even read them. She's like performing them in a TED talk. Oh, wow. It's very, very jarring. And I guess that was the point.
Rough. Is she working in Hollywood? Does she have a career?
She's working in the Congolese rainforest.
The Congolese rainforest.
To answer your question,
not anymore.
I can't remember the last thing she was in as an actress.
But this was a Weinstein issue too, right?
Oh. She was involved in the
whether it's blackballed or, you know, she definitely had her grievance against why she hadn't been working.
Let's be realistic here. You can age out of Hollywood. You can age out of, especially if you were, I don't want to say trading on your looks, but she was such a beautiful young actress, and she probably got a lot of work based on her aesthetic, and the aesthetic has gone away to some degree, and that's how Hollywood works. So it's always hard to tell if you're actually being blackballed or not, but maybe it's a little bit of each. Max Pat, do you have that? Gina can move on to her next.
Real quick, she said one of the reasons for telling her story was to share the conservation work she does involving bonobos. So that's her thing.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Well, she'll be back. Yeah. I hope. I think. Sorry, do you have it, Max Pat?
Your own genes, but yeah, I'm a nasty woman. A loud, vulgar, proud woman. I'm not nasty like the combo of Trump and Pence being served up to me in my voting booth. I'm nasty like the battles my grandmothers fought to get me into that voting booth. I'm nasty like the fight for wage equality. Scarlett Johansson, why were the female actors paid less than half of what the male actors earned last year? See, even when we do go into higher paying jobs, our wages are still cut with blades sharpened by testosterone. Why is the work of a black woman and a Hispanic woman worth only 63 and 54 cents of a white man?
Yeah. I wish I was half as being into a dude as she is into being a chick. You know what I mean? My lament is I'm sort of lukewarm on being a heterosexual dude. I just don't feel like...
Why did she perform that like it was like a WWE monologue?
Oh, wow. Was
playing in the back row.
Yeah. That sounded like straight out of WWE.
It was her performance.
She's inspired. All right, let's do another, Gina Grad.
Oh, good. Well, we haven't seen the last of Rachel Dolezal, but she kind of feels like she has. So she's gained fame, 6 years ago, basically. She posed as a black woman.
Has it been 6 years?
Yeah, 6 years.
Wow. God.
She was exposed as a fraud by her parents, who now say, and now she says she can't find a job. She can't find a job doing anything. She appeared on the Tamron Hall show to tell her that she still can't get work due to, you know, the way she was exposed. Back in 2015, Dolezal, then living in Spokane, Washington, was serving as president of the local NAACP chapter while working as a professor of African studies at Eastern Washington University until her white parents outed her for being a white woman and a fraud within the black community. Here's a clip of Rachel talking to Tamron about what she's been doing the last 6 years. Before you play it, her hair is in full braids. She has a map of Africa behind her and an African painting as well.
I'm still pressing forward, but it has been really tough for sure. You know, having not had a job for 6 years, I've had to create my own job and find ways to provide for my children through braiding hair, through grant writing to bring funds into marginalized communities and black owned businesses and nonprofits, through painting, through doing pep talks on cameo.com. So It's definitely been a long 6 years, but I really strongly believe that, you know, as a person, you have to just continue to be who you are, and, you know, you can't change who you are.
I think her parents would beg to differ. Yes, go ahead.
Tamron addresses it. She goes, you can, you did, but then the conversation devolved, so it wasn't worth.
See, this is where, see, there used to be a thriving porn industry, and for anyone, male or female, that had been sort of chewed up and spat out by society or disgraced, there was always a payday. Right. There was just that payday, which is doing your porn movie. If you were John Wayne Bobbitt and you got your dick cut off by your wife, don't worry. There was one more payday for you. You may not have been employable in corporate America, but porn, the good folks at Vivid would give you a job. And there was always that out. You know, there was always that. You know, if this was 20 years ago, she would have got offered a decent porn contract for like a one-off porn. And we would have had to watch just out of curiosity, right? And they would have worked a big theme in. They definitely would have had a black guy in there. And she would have kept the map up behind her and kept the cornrows and everything. So there was this payday. I don't think there's a porn payday anymore.
Yeah. Not the Doctor Mom. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Did Octomom do a porn?
I'm all...
Nadia Schulman, hold on.
I think she did.
Well, it sounds kind of familiar, and that's what it was. Like, we had a...
Well, she was at least offered. I remember that was the story at the time.
Octomom Nadia Schulman, who turned to porn to make ends meet.
Yes.
The name of the porn is Make Ends Meet.
They had... No matter what happened... At some point, when the wheels came off the wagon, you had a golden parachute filled with jizz known as the porn industry. But no longer. I don't think that exists anymore.
You know, OnlyFans, I guess.
OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's where we're at now. OnlyFans.
Yeah. You got to go to OnlyFans. And right. Yeah. And what goes on at OnlyFans? Like,
don't act like you don't know.
Well,
yeah, you know.
It's always like recipes for gazpacho, and I can make waffles shaped as hearts. But it's like you're diddling yourself, right?
There actually is some of that stuff on there. Like, there's girls who will, like, you know, say that this is what once you sign up, that's what you get, you know, but they hit you with the reroute.
So what are you talking about, Adam? What do you mean?
Spell it out.
Like, they'll post, like, you know, like a picture of them, like, you know, like they're about to get naked or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Then you sign up and you pay, and then it's them, like, you know, giving you a day in the life or like a behind the scenes of what they do. And you're like, oh, come on.
The old masturbate and switch.
Right.
I gotta write this down.
I don't know personally, but I've heard from people that's what they do.
That could be a potential move for me.
Oh, yeah.
You hit them with bait and switch.
I like
Works
that.
Every time.
You're leaving money on the table, Gina.
That's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. I think we all are.
Yeah, and speaking of that, there's dude OnlyFans.
Oh yeah,
they make past Disney
stars. One of my buddies
stars.
Makes like $100,000 a month off OnlyFans.
Really?
What does he have to do?
Yeah, what's he have to do?
I mean, he's getting down and dirty. I mean, for sure. But
good for him.
I mean, he's making like $100,000 a month. Off that?
But it's four dudes, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. See, that's the other thing. You have to be comfortable with that because, like, his main demo is all guys. You know, girls aren't going to pay.
Right.
But back in the day when shit was open and Gina was fun, you go dance at the Abbey all night, and a lot of those bartenders and like go-go dancers are not gay.
Oh.
Or at least that's the rumor. But you make really good money, you know, flirting it up and having a good night, you know.
I mean, he's not gay. That's the thing. So, right. You know, he knows. He knows what's up.
Does he?
He's shrewd.
Does he have to pretend like he's gay?
I think where you make the majority of your money is like you. So you pay like, you know, monthly, right, for the person, right? But you really make your money in private messaging because you could like charge them anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you like pay, and then you know you're paying before you even open up the message. So if you're like, hey, let me see a picture of your feet or something, right? Then they pay like this much, and then you send them the picture. So I don't think he's playing along with the. I think he's just giving them what they want. I don't think they're asking him to do like specific gay things. Just. Like shirtless pics or whatever it is. I don't know.
This is good because I'm on Cameo. It's like, hey, happy birthday, whatever. And there are dudes that are like, can you wear something green? And can you tilt the camera down? I'm like, I don't do that. But but I am leaving money on the table. OnlyFans, I'll wear green for you. I'll call you the naughty boy. What are you
got green in the background right now.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Throw it on.
Yeah, I guess this is the kind of the new world order. But you have to have, well, maybe Ashley Judd will, and after she heals, will end up doing that.
Because she is a nasty woman.
Yeah, man. She's got chops. All right, let's do one more, Gina Grad.
All right. Well, remember that horrific commercial that we spent way too much time on because we just couldn't stop from the Super Bowl, the Oatly commercial, the Oatly milk, the guy and the wow, no cow, wow, whatever?
Yes.
Well, the creative team behind Oatly has a little bit of a sense of humor, I guess. Fox News reports that in less than 24 hours, the vegan-friendly milk company designed a shirt referencing the ad. It went on the website and it totally sold out. I think we have a picture of it. It's a white short sleeve T-shirt featuring the company's CEO. And it says, I totally hated that Oatly commercial. Now, everyone's divided on if it was good or bad, but it was $28 and sold out in less than 24 hours.
Is he doing like kind of a Brian Bosworth here where it's like he's created... He knowingly created this to stir up controversy, and now we're all talking about it. So, you know, Brian Bosworth created this sort of bigger than life, you know, college football linebacker, the Bos thing. And I think he would sell T-shirts like at the game that were anti.
Yeah, Bos sucks.
Bos sucks.
But really?
He'd be selling the Bos sucks shirts.
As it pertains to Super Bowl, Super Bowl commercials, you either want to be the very easy formula they stumbled upon is you want to either be the best or the worst according to the ad meters, right?
Right.
Like because the next day on all the morning shows all around the country and now podcasts, they'll be all about, well, this one was considered the best and this one was considered the worst. Let's hear it, and then you're going to get your commercial played on every for free or discussed or whatever, and your name thrown out there on every talk show.
And I couldn't tell you for $1 million what the best commercial was of, you know, what, 2017? But I can tell you what a puppy monkey baby is.
Yeah, you don't want to be caught in
that 4 years
middle.
Ago. By the way, this guy looks like absolute date rape, and I'm sure he's not. But that is one of the scariest pictures I've ever seen
in Brian Bosworth? Yeah, the Bos. He's the greatest.
Was he a scary dude or a nice guy? Because he looks really scary.
His persona was kind of, you know, tough guy. He was in a movie, Adam. What was his movie? He was like a motorcycle tough guy or something.
He was.
Right?
I think he was a cop near the edge who played by some of the rules. I think that's how it was described.
He picked and chose his own rules.
Yes. His name was Dirk Noncommittal. And he didn't play by all the rules, but he played by some of the rules. He was like in like Stone Cold or something. He had a TV show for a while, and he also had a cop show where Stone Cold. You asked me my son's middle name. I have no fucking idea, but I know the Bos was Stone Cold. Like,
ooh, it says a cop who enforces his own brand of justice.
That's right. And had to infiltrate a biker gang to bust, the gang that was running meth, you know, and he had to infiltrate. It's so perfect.
I would just call him not Dolph Lundgren. He's the other one. Like, look at him.
Yes. Yeah, it's the
Strong
Bos.
Chin.
Yeah. He was he created this amazing character for himself. I had some decent years in the NFL. You know, wasn't a bust.
Oh, he was a stud in college. Like, he was like a two-time All-American. Like, he was a real stud.
He was a full stud in college, and people sort of think of him as a bust in the NFL, but he was around for 8 or 10 years and played okay. And, you know, he wasn't a bust. It's just he was such a phenom in college that when he got to the NFL, people are like, "Hey, he's not a phenom anymore."
Right.
There's like a famous thing that he gets a lot of crap for, which is he was run over by Bo Jackson, you know, in the NFL. But I mean, it wasn't really run over. It's like Bo Jackson is one of the greatest specimens ever created by God. Like, here's a guy with world-class speed who could hit a baseball 475 feet, who could outrun at 240 pounds. He could outrun every DB in the league who had world-class speed. I mean, Bo Jackson was a force of nature. And Brian Bosworth kind of hit him at an angle on the goal line, and Bo Jackson went into the end zone. It was like, Bo Jackson runs over Brian Bosworth. Like, there's not an individual on the planet who could stop Bo Jackson with a head of steam in his prime heading for the goal line. There's not a human being.
Yeah, not to take anything away from Bo Jackson, one of the greatest, like you said, physical specimens of all time. Bo had the ankle, but Bo was going to run over anybody who was in his way.
Yeah, there's no, if two or three guys got to Bo at the goal line, maybe. But the angle he was at and Boz, not a chance any human being was going to stop Bo Jackson.
Adam, I hate to disagree with you. Brian Bosworth, 3 years in the NFL, combined 24 games. So he was.
Oh, he only played 3 years?
That's what it says on Football Reference.
Oh, I guess he. Yeah. I know he jacked his shoulder up, so maybe it got cut short. I thought he had a few more years in there. It's all with Seattle, I guess.
Yeah, 24 games combined, not even two full seasons.
Yeah, there's a story too where he trash talked John Elway. So before the
he
Denver
played
game,
into the persona for sure.
Yeah, before the Denver game, 10,000 Denver fans wore $15 T-shirts reading "What's a Bosworth?" Nothing, but they didn't know that Bosworth's company manufactured those shirts.
Yeah, he's a genius.
I love this guy.
Stone cold, Gina. Jeez, only 3 years in the league. I thought he played more. I stand corrected. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he injured his shoulder. Also, Seattle's such a weird place for Bosworth to go because he was such a big Sooner college guy. He was Oklahoma Sooner, and it was
tough
all,
guy villain
like,
type
yeah, it was
almost
weird. Seattle had to be the one of the weirdest places ever for that guy to end up, but he did. All right, shall we bring it home, Gina Grad?
Let's do it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, Adam Waheed, everyone, the film Tribes is available now on YouTube, and you can also go to the website, youtube.com/AdamW, and Instagram and TikTok at AdamW as well. Thanks for joining us, Adam.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Continued success, and keep fighting the good fight. All right, last but not least, there is Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you got to do one or the other. And then there's your automotive policy. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save. Geico makes it easy. Visit geico.com today and bundle up with geico.com. All right, I want to thank Ross Novy for joining us and talking sanely about reopening schools. You can go to laschooluprising.com. And Oklahoma City, Bricktown Comedy Club, coming up February 26th, 27th. They're doing live pods there and stand-up as well. So, 3,000th show tomorrow. Doug Allen, creator of Entourage, my favorite on tomorrow. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Adam Waheed and Ross Novy. Gina Grad and Paul Bryant saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Give him a thumbs up on Facebook at Adam Carolla. And get him on Instagram there too. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And get everything you need, including Adam's latest book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, at the website, adamcarolla.com.